everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is not only Dan Lyons, but also Nunes Magician Basketball Editor James Zuba. How's it going, guys?
Doing well. Happy Thanksgiving week, everyone.
Pleasure to be on. First time in a year, I think it's been, so good to be back on and looking forward to talking some hoops here.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving week to everybody. We'll cut the usual Mets small talk and NBA free agency chatter, because we do have quite a bit to attend to this week on top of our usual, recapping a terrible Syracuse football game and looking forward to another. We also have men's basketball season about to start. So we brought in James to kind of give us a lay of the land. Not like Dan and I don't know the team, but obviously, James being in the weeds to the extent he is, on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis. Definitely the type of expert that we want to have in the door. So I guess, James, right off the bat, it seems like we're having the Bryant game to start. How confident are you that this schedule goes off as planned, at least to as much as possible?
Well, it's already been a bumpy road to start, obviously, with Jim Boeheim and another member of the team testing positive over a week ago. So it's already off to a rocky start. They do plan to host Bryant as scheduled. That game is expected to go off. No issues as of right now on the Bryant side. And we got a little bit of a notice earlier today saying that, Jim Boeheim had gone through the 10-day quarantine and he's now exited isolation, and no positive tests have occurred since the initial positive, or the second positive, I should say. I think there will be some bumps along the way. I mean, we've seen it across the country. Over 30 programs have paused activities. And, just recently, Baylor Scott Drew has tested positive as well. So I just think with cases going, rising across the country as they are, it's to be expected. And, we can get into the discussion of whether it's ethical or not. But I would expect there to be some bumps along the way here.
Yeah, Dan, I know you and I talked about just kind of what exactly people were thinking with the travel schedule and cram schedule and cram just everything this year. Given that, like, Duke's already canceled the first game and there's bound to be more, what would be your over-under on how many non-conference games actually happen for Syracuse?
Oh, I mean, I can't even venture to guess, honestly. We're in such, like, such unprecedented territory, and like obviously that's just a thing that we say about everything now. I guess like the upshot for Syracuse is, like, of all the teams, it seems like we've at least done something right in terms of football. Like, we've had so many cancellations across football, and somehow Syracuse, in all of their might and glory this year, have managed to play every game. So I don't know if that'll translate to basketball. Obviously, we have Boeheim coming down with COVID. We've had another unnamed player. But the bigger concern, it takes two to play, obviously, and it just seems like college basketball, for whatever reason, you'd think that with, like, smaller teams and smaller rosters, it'd be a little easier to have a handle on, but it seems like it's been just as bad. I mean, we only have a handful of these non-conference teams scheduled to begin with. I think we'll play a couple, but it's so hard to know, like, because there's so many moving parts, what's even reasonable. Maybe that Rutgers game goes off because it's, I think students will probably be off gone from both campuses by then. Maybe the same thing with Buffalo. And maybe that's like the one key to this that, like, helps get through, like, the early part of the schedule here with the Boston College game, the Notre Dame game, is that you won't have these full campuses, which drive up concerns. But it just seems like it was such a haphazard way to put this whole sport together this year, which we talked about at length last week. And it's very frustrating. We have, three on the schedule right now. Maybe we add another, maybe we get four in. But it's just crazy that, like, no one seems to have a definite plan for what's going on moving forward. And then you have, like, the added frustrations from people like Rick Pitino, who, of all people, has been hammering home, like, let's just push this stuff back. We have a vaccine on the way. We probably shouldn't be in a position where the vaccine goes to college basketball players first, but it wouldn't surprise me if something stupid like that happened. But in any case, like, just like there's nothing saying we have to have the tournament in March. Let's push stuff back a couple months and see where we're at. And that doesn't seem to be happening. So, I'll stay optimistic and say we get, like, most of the stuff that's on the schedule now in. But, like, once we get into the heart of ACC play, where you're trying to stack these games on one another and you're trying to travel across the country and potentially have players back on, or students back on campus, it's going to be a total mess. So I guess we'll see what happens. Hopefully we have the same luck in terms of getting the games on as football, and slightly better luck in terms of actually like winning them.
Well, it would be hard to have worse luck in that regard. I think Syracuse football was determined to give us the football whether we wanted it or not. I guess jumping right into kind of the season we expect and some of the things that are different. James, like, Alan Griffin comes in as an Illinois transfer. He gets the waiver. He's expected basically by a lot of fans, by outsiders, to take up some of the scoring load from, you know, the team's leading scorer last year, Elijah Hughes, who ended up getting drafted in the NBA last week. How much is that realistic, I guess? And do you think that Griffin ends up putting in like a really strong campaign, or do you think it takes him a little bit to kind of get his sea legs within the Syracuse program, both on offense and defense?
I think we've underrated just how good Elijah Hughes was to a certain degree last year. You know, obviously 19 points a game, led the ACC in scoring, was on first team all ACC, and just had a great year for a relatively, you know, underwhelming Syracuse basketball team that finished 18-14. But he did so much. And I think one area that's been undersold is just how important he was as sort of a pressure release guy, being able to play point forward at times, you know, take care of the ball and make plays for others. Obviously his scoring will be missed. He could do it from all three levels, really good shooter, you know, from three in the mid range, and then got to the rim pretty effectively as well. And he defended. So I think we've undersold that, but from what we've heard and everything we know right now, Griffin should help with that to some degree. I don't think he's going to fully replace what Hughes did, but we know he's a good shooter. He'll have to do a little bit more than what he was able to showcase at Illinois. You know, just kind of looking at the tape there, it seemed like he was in a little bit more of a catch and shoot role with Ayo Dosunmu, kind of the ball dominant guard. He's almost like a Tyus Battle. But for Griffin specifically, I think he'll get to showcase a little bit more of his game at Syracuse. And Jim Boeheim actually compared his motor to Bi Musakata in practices before the pause. Just said, you know, he's really going after every ball, every offensive rebound, diving after it. He's really involved in plays. So I think his shooting will help. We all know he's a really good shooter. He'll probably start at the forward. You know, he'll put up points. But just how much he's able to put the ball on the deck and create for others and get to the rim, we've yet to see. So he'll have to do a little bit more of that.
And Dan, how about you? Are you pretty high on what Griffin brings to the table? I mean, obviously, you and I have talked at length too about Hughes and about, you know, the kind of NBA type skill set that he brought. If Griffin's more of a Tyus Battle type player, maybe that does add a different wrinkle, especially when it seems like we have not redundant players to Griffin, but obviously like Buddy Boeheim and Joe Girard, maybe some of the strengths that Griffin has are also some of their biggest strengths as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm never going to complain about getting extra shooting, and it sounds like that's his number one still and what he really brings. Obviously, it's going to be very hard to replace Elijah, and it's not really realistic to ask him to do that, because while I think there are probably some similarities in their ability to knock down shots, Elijah, like James said, was so good in that point forward role that we probably, like, ideally wouldn't have had him play, but he just did it with aplomb, and the team would have been way worse if he couldn't, like, handle the ball as much as he did. Also defensively, Elijah became a real asset in the zone, like probably one of the best wing off ball defenders that we've had since Wes Johnson, coming from the corner. So it's gonna be a lot to ask of him to have similar impacts there. If he can put the ball on the deck and, like, kick out, like, this team on paper should have a decent amount of shooting. I mean, he, Girard, and Buddy, like, will probably go up against any trio in terms of shooting. It's a matter of, like, can people penetrate? Maybe if Tadari Richmond is lives up to the significant hype that I think Boeheim has been out front in putting on him, which isn't the first time he's done that with a freshman, but that would be a big thing. I think, you know, if you see guys like Buddy and Girard and Quincy Guerrier take that next step forward, I think, you know, I don't think it's going to be one person who, like, replaces Elijah. I think it's a matter of, like, you plug in a couple of guys like Kadari, like Griffin, and then you hope that you have, like, the rising tide that comes with having a really young team last year kind of moving up. And then maybe we'll see, like, you know, even if you lose this, like, really good NBA talent player, you end up with a better team overall. We've seen Syracuse do that before, and we've seen Syracuse struggle to adjust to losing players like that. So hopefully it's the former. But overall, I'm very excited to see him. Like, anyone who can knock down like 40% of his threes and is athletic and can get to the hole, like, I will take a million of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, obviously, you know, Hughes was a great shooter last year and really increased his range, you know, beyond the three-point arc. What I'm curious about is if Griffin is even more prolific out there, like, do we start to see more spacing inside and what that could potentially do for a guy like Guerrier or Dolezal? Or Bahrama Sidibe, and how they might be able to attack the rim better. I know Sidibe in particular, Boeheim said himself, was probably their best player or one of their best couple players over the last like 7 to 10 games of the season. Dan, if like we're looking at like an ideal distribution of maybe Elijah's points, how do you see that breaking out? And like it obviously doesn't have to be like a specific per player basis, but more like if we're looking to at least equal his production, do you want to see more of those points going to the guards? Do you want to see more of them going towards Griffin? Or do you think that really where this offense can thrive most is maybe if a lot of those points end up getting siphoned inside and specifically to, you know, the big men?
I think a balance would be ideal. I think maybe, you know, the guards take on a little bit more of the outside shooting slash Griffin, who is like the most likely candidate to take on like that, the 3-point shot. But then hopefully, you know, you see Buddy continue to improve and Joe continue to improve. But then I'd love to see the kind of play from Daria that we saw at times last year, especially towards the end of the season. Like he really came on strong as he started to dig himself out of that Boeheim doghouse that we see so many players go in. He looked like, I mean, he was awesome inside and awesome attacking the rim. And then if we could see a little bit to Richmond, a little bit to, I mean, Dolezal, we've been, you know, he's a great player for us and he does a lot and he could take on a lot of that ball, the ball handling role. But if we can see him finally like take that next step that he's like flirted with and not quite gotten to. So yeah, I think it's going to be a team effort. I don't think you're going to have like one dude jump up like 10 points per game, but like, you know, 4 or 5 here and there. I think you're better off as a team for that if you're not one-dimensional, which has been a problem for Syracuse in the last couple of years.
Yeah, agreed. I'd love to get away from the 3-on-5 offensive sets that we've been running. But James, how about you? How do you see this kind of playing out?
Yeah, agree with Dan's point. I think it's going to be more balanced across the board. You know, nobody's expecting Allen to come in and get 19 points a game like Elijah did. But if he can come in and give you 12 to 15 points, I mean, I think that's pretty solid. And then, you know, Buddy Boeheim averaged 15 points per game last year. That's a lot. And I don't know if we can really expect him to get up to 18 or 19. I mean, I think that's a lot. Maybe, you know, he can add another point or two to his average. Same with Joe Girard and the forwards across the board. So it's a good offensive team. Last year, the offense wasn't the problem for Syracuse. It was the defense. So if they can continue to play offense like they did last year, that's really solid. And if Barama's improved or at least – you know, at the very least, plays like he did over the last 7 or 8 games of the season, you feel pretty good about that. And you have a little bit more depth with the bench as well. I don't think Jim Boeheim's going to sit there and play, you know, 9 guys like he says he could. He potentially could, like he seems to do every preseason. But at least you have the depth that, you know, if there are injuries there, there are other guys that could step in.
Makes sense. So, like, I know you mentioned depth a little bit. Knowing that we're usually looking at a 7 or 8-man rotation, James, what's your – who do you think your guys are, you know, going into the year, at least if you're Jim Boeheim?
Yeah. The returning 4 starters makes sense. I mean, I think you could pretty much plug those guys in with Buddy and Joe up top and then Bahrama and Marek at the 4 and the 5. Griffin assuredly would probably fill the, you know, 3 spot with Hughes. And then you have Quincy and Kadari as 6 and 7 guys off the bench. The backup center is probably the most interesting or at least most up for grabs position. Jesse Edwards is back. He was over in the Netherlands this summer and kind of got a late start. He came back in August to Syracuse and had to quarantine for a couple weeks. So he was a little bit behind in terms of some of his other teammates. A previously top 50 recruit, Frank Anselm, is in at center. He reclassified and moved up a year. So he's still pretty young. I don't know that, you know, we've heard good things. We've heard he's athletic. Boeheim has said both of those guys have worked hard, but he doesn't really know what he's going to have out of those guys until he sees them in game action. And then there's the potential that Marek could just slide over and play 5. I don't think they want to do that this year, but that's certainly always an option. He's played some center as well. So I think that's kind of what we see, maybe a 7 or 8-man rotation.
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe early on we see something resembling 8. I mean, we don't have the same sort of non-conference kind of lead into the season. So obviously it looks a little bit different. I think Jim's typically gone to maybe 9 at first, see what he has on his hands, and then go from there. But I think most of what you spell out there is pretty fair. And you know, I do want to see more of Edwards. I think he was really interesting on offense when he was in games last year. But realistically, yeah, that delay that you mentioned is potentially problematic. Anselm's an interesting one. I feel like he's your stereotypical player to redshirt for Boeheim. But at the same time, like, he was someone who showed offensive prowess. You know, at the high school level, he was, I think, good enough to reclassify. I know at one point in the 2021 rankings, he was, what, top 50 or so? Well, I was just saying, like, for me, like, and like, a lot, there's plenty to hammer about recruiting of late, but I would say that, like, I think last year, this past class ends up being a little more interesting because of something like that, where those numbers aren't really impacted by how his reclassification, he was slotted in as, what, like a top 150, 160 player when he reclassified, but in reality, he was probably still in the top 100.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you are moving up a grade, so obviously you're competing against, you know, obviously players that are better, and you can get into the weeds on recruiting and rankings, and you could say something like, well, Elijah Hughes wasn't even in the top 100 in his class, and look where he is. So it's an inexact science. You never really know with recruiting, but we've heard good things from the coaching staff. He's long, he's athletic. Presumably that fits well with the center position, being able to get to the high post and stretch to the corners, but you never know. Like Jim Boeheim said, you won't know until you see it in games, and you never truly know with freshmen when they're coming in.
True. Dan, how about putting on your Jim Boeheim hat or lack thereof? What would be your rotation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's likely to look pretty similar to what you guys said. You know, I would love to see more Guerrier. I think he is potentially like maybe like the key figure for me, because I think we kind of know what we're getting from. I mean, obviously we don't really know what we're getting from Allen, but we trust what we've seen from him at Illinois. And we, you know, we at least know generally what we're doing from Marek and Sidibe. Obviously, if Sidibe takes like this big leap forward, then we're talking a whole new front court for us. But assuming that there's like maybe moderate steps, I think Gary is the one who could really have a breakout. And also just like, I think the most interesting thing is that like our front court is potentially way deeper. And I say that because I know how Boeheim works, and, you know, in 3 weeks we'll have like three guys playing two positions. But potentially a lot deeper than our backcourt, where we have like, really, it sounds like four guys who are going to play a decent amount. So I don't know if there's like solutions to sliding a guy back to the small forward position in some situations, but like right now it's basically Gerard, Canary, Buddy, and Griffin for those three spots. And I don't know, what do you guys, how do you guys think we're going to handle that besides the most likely options that they're going to play like 38 minutes a game each?
I mean, that seems the most likely, yes. I know a couple of people were talking about in the comments that I found interesting. Maybe Guerrier at the three.
I've thought about that.
My big issue, though, is that Guerrier isn't necessarily like a great ball handler. And obviously, like Marek can pass, and that's all. But like, we don't necessarily have a lot of like shot creators then on the floor, right? And you do end up with like that thing that we've had lately when we do have a bigger lineup is three guys kind of bogging down the middle, and then Gerard and Boeheim just kind of jacking up shots outside.
Yeah, that's the biggest concern I think for this team on the offensive end is who's your playmaker. You know, is Joe Gerard willing to take a little bit more of a back seat and facilitate and create more for guys with Hughes not there, or can Marek or maybe Allen or, you know, guys step up and do something we haven't seen as much of? Marek might be your best option there in terms of creating off the dribble and being able to find guys. We know he's unselfish, but he hasn't had to do a ton of that as of yet. So, you know, that remains to be seen, but that's the biggest area. As far as the top of the zone goes, I know some people think that Griffin could play the two. I think he can, but I think, you know, barring, you know, no injuries and the three guys that they have, I think those three guys are going to play. Boeheim, sometimes he will hype up freshmen or say, you know, speak in hyperbole, saying this is the best guy we've had in a long while. But I think it's sincere with Kadari. And I think if you look at him, I don't know that he's going to set the ACC on fire, but I think he's going to be really good. The coaching staff seems to think that he's going to play exclusively point guard. They didn't know he was a point guard coming in. So when he comes into the game, they say they'll slide Joe over to the two, and maybe that, you know, lets him create his own shot, or at least, you know, he doesn't have to set up the offense, and maybe he can play make from that two guard spot. But I think they're going to be pretty solid with that three guard rotation up top.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And I think the key here, and like we talked about Guerrier kind of being locked in at the four for the most part. I think like, and this isn't a knock necessarily, but like Buddy kind of being locked into the two is also its own like kind of, it does landlock the offense a little bit and what you can do. Because yeah, you can't like physically like, but he can't play the three. He can't be a one. Like Gerard, if Gerard can develop into someone who can play both guard positions, I think that does open up a lot more for what they can do with this roster.
Yeah, I think if we get like a rec situation where, you know, like you guys said, he has been, he's looked really good playmaking from like the high post here and there. We haven't seen it really as like a central part of the offense. Like we haven't seen him do like full like Jokic stuff from there. It's like possession by possession. So that definitely could be an interesting solution, especially if we're going to be able to throw the three made shooters out there. But then Kadari could also unlock a lot. Like, it doesn't sound like he's a great shooter, but if he's like three quarters of as good as Boeheim is hyping him up to be right away, and we've seen Boeheim do this and it work out great, and we've seen Boeheim do it and the guy ends up like not being very good. So it's really it's not like, oh, he wouldn't be saying this if it wasn't true. Like, we've seen Jim do both. But if he is like a similar player to what Boeheim says, and he does have those point guard skills, like that's huge because we do need that secondary guy. I think Gerard showed us like probably more than we expected as a true freshman last year, but he's obviously like, we don't want him as the only primary ball handler for 38 minutes. I don't think that's like healthy for anyone. And just being able to roll out those extra looks and like, hey, we could either go three wide and bomb you, or we can have this high post like 6'10" like point forward, or we could have this 6'5" point guard who will get to the rim in three steps. And it's just nice to be able to roll out those different kind of attacks, and that's something we've also been lacking.
Dan, you bring up a good point too, because even if Kadari's not a good shooter, I don't think he necessarily needs to be, because his skill set is different than what you have at the 1-3, you know, assuming Griffin's at the three. He can come in and he can run the offense and he can kind of facilitate. Maybe he doesn't get enough minutes to be like a primary playmaker. You know, maybe he only gets 10 to 15 minutes at a, you know, in a game. But if he can come in and bring a different skill set than what Joe and Buddy have, that's a big help for Syracuse.
Great points there, guys. A couple, not to move us along like too quickly, but figure before we get to halftime, I did want to just quick talk defense a bit. We've mentioned the zone. Obviously, like Elijah was a great defender within the zone. I think an underrated one at that, as we've kind of touched on. And Griffin's going to have some big shoes to fill there. On top of that, though, the guards do need to make a little bit of progress on that front to help things out a little bit. Obviously, last year's defense had quite a few problems, kind of reminiscent of the 2016-17 team in that regard. James, what's your – obviously, like, we're not going to suddenly see all conference defenders, you know, from the guards, but what's the – What would be like one or two like small things that can make a big difference for Buddy and Gerard in particular, if not Kadari as well?
Yeah, not to be overly critical, but I do think those guys were given a little bit of a pass on the defense last year. Certainly there were breakdowns from the forward spot with Quincy not having full health, obviously, with his groin, and other breakdowns in the zone as well. But I think that's the area of the zone that has to improve the most, is the top of the zone. Can those guys defend? Can they get stops? Last year, you know, as you mentioned, the defense was more similar to that 2016-2017 team. It was the second worst in the KenPom era under Jim Boeheim. So that's pretty poor. Adjusted defense, looking at it now, ranked 116th last year, 99.6 adjusted defensive efficiency. That's not good. To be able to take that defense and maybe get that up to a top 50 or top 40 KenPom defensive efficiency team is going to be a tall order, especially when you return most of the personnel from last year. So if Boeheim can do that, that's a heck of a coaching job. Everybody's got to get a little bit better. I think everybody probably did in the offseason, so there's hope there, but you are returning a pretty poor defense. So those guys are going to have to get a little bit more creative up top in terms of, you know, how they play the passing angles, how they cut guys off, not take so many risks. Donna DeTota had a really good piece over at Syracuse.com interviewing Frank Howard and Tyus Battle, and how those guys knew they were able to take more risks because they knew they had 7'2" Pascal Chukwu back there. I think this year you kind of have to be a little bit less risky. Obviously those guys, they can get a little bit quicker, but not too much quicker. So they're just going to have to play well within the zone. They're going to have to hedge a little bit better and just, you know, kind of lock in there and not go for so many steals and just play solid defense.
Yeah, and two, obviously, you know, quickness is something that you need at least a little bit of, but, you know, both Buddy and Gerard have kind of from all accounts, added some good weight in the offseason, but you have to wonder what the impact is on quickness for right. both of those guys.
Dan,
how about you? Do you feel like there's, I mean, obviously there's no magic pill here, but do you think there's at least a couple like small tweaks that they can make?
I think just experience, honestly, is the biggest thing in the zone. And we have a couple guys who, you know, were early in it last year. And obviously having Gerard play so much as a true freshman and play arguably the one or, you know, first or second most important position in it. And they're all important, like they all serve a function. But I'm less worried about the defense. Like, obviously, it's a kind of a concern that we're returning mostly the same team without arguably the best defender in it. But also, like we saw, like you said, that 2017 team was ranked 119 in KenPom on defense. The following year, they were ranked fifth. The year after, they were 30th. And then we fell back to 116 last year. So, like, we've seen, like, spots of bad defense. I think the offense is more of a systematic issue until I see differently. Like, we could have a bad defensive end this year. But I trust Boeheim more in, like, getting his guys used to the system and playing it well. Versus the offense, I think we've seen like more repeated issues year over year. So, I'm slightly concerned, but also we have like, you know, a number of three front court guys who now have at least one full season in it. We have two guards who have played a lot of it, even if it hasn't always been effectively. If they can, if Buddy and Gerard can both get up to like B minus C plus levels most nights, and our offense can roll the way that like on paper it should be able to. Like I'll sign for it and like. Say hopefully our front court, which has I think more upside of the defensive end, can clean it up. It's a concern, but I'm less worried of it becoming this thing where like the defense just is bad all of a sudden all the time, because we saw like that same kind of weird fall off and then uptick just a few years ago.
Yeah, that is perfectly fair, and honestly, like I do trust, like you said, Boeheim a little bit more in the defensive end at this point in the offense. I think the offense again is. If they can find a way to progress out of the 3-on-5 setup, however they do that, I think we'll be in much better shape there. I think there's much bigger lift on defense, but I think that's a lift that Jim's capable of. I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor here this week before we get into a little bit of halftime conversation. If you're struggling to find a gift that perfectly encapsulates your love or passion for Out of the Orange, Syracuse, or any other school, maybe check out Homefield Apparel. If you're looking for a holiday gift, just trying to show off your impeccable style at your in-laws this holiday, and you want to own them in some sort of rivalry game, Homefield does have you covered. I don't know if I'm sure everyone's heard from us about Homefield at this point. They have really great, unique, thoughtful designs, prints on the comfiest hoodies and tees that you'll ever own. Dan and I regularly talk about just how great they are. James, do you have yourself any Homefield Apparel merchandise yet?
I do. Over the summer, I received my Cuse script shirt in the mail. It's extremely comfortable. It's actually probably the most comfortable shirt that I own. And you can never go wrong with the script. I think, you know, us at Noons and the fan base at large really appreciate the script.
Yeah, everybody's pro script and should be around these parts. But if you want to be pro script too, or, you know, support a donkey biting through a stick of dynamite or an anteater or any other random mascot. I mean, Wavy the Wave would be the pick of this podcast most days. You can get 30% off your entire order with BF Noons. That's BFNUNES at checkout. Treat yourself or somebody else for the holidays. It'll be well worth it. We can promise you that.
Yeah. I mean, no one should be going anywhere. So comfort is number one. So get the most comfortable clothes possible. That's basically the thing.
Yeah, that's an inarguable proposition there.
This also reminded me that Tulane had a devastating football loss, which was only overshadowed by our football loss, which wasn't as devastating as much as just like just bad on every front. And then the Packers, my NFL team, handed away a game yesterday. So I had a great weekend, guys. Just really good. I drank a lot of whiskey yesterday.
Delightful. Speaking of drinking. Great segue, Dan. What have you been drinking?
A lot of scotch. And also, I got some stuff from Five Boroughs Brewing down in Brooklyn. I got their Session IPA. I've been drinking a lot of Sessions recently, which is always really good. Their IPAs overall are really good. I also got a hoppy lager from them, which is good. I was hoping it was going to be a little more lager with like a hop finish, and it's definitely more, it drinks more like an IPA. So it was like a little, not quite what, I was hoping for. Still very drinkable. I'm not complaining. And then I also was still working on the Dogfishes and the Cigar Cities in my fridge. And then, yeah, after the Packers decided to not score in the second half, I poured myself two really tall glasses of scotch and had a mild hangover this morning. So having a great time.
Nicely done. James, how about yourself? I know you're more of a wine drinker, but whatever you've been imbibing.
You guys are going to blow me out of the water with your beer knowledge, but I'm back up in Syracuse, so I've been getting a little bit more into the craft beer scene. Nice brewery out of Cooperstown. You guys probably know it. I had an Amagang Wit yesterday, and it was really good. But again, you guys, certainly your expertise, you'd know more. I don't know if that's considered a good beer or not, but I enjoyed it.
Amagang Wit is like, if the Syracuse alums here probably all had their moments with it at Fagan's, it's like a great starting to like find your way into craft beer, like Amagang stuff. Okay. In general, it's super accessible, I think, and like they just make really good versions of like everything, so you could, I mean, yeah. They're always really reliable and really good. They're wit straight. It's like one of my favorite wits.
That makes me feel better, Dan, thank you.
Just for you.
No, they're honestly like, yeah, that was like probably like one of like the first like five or six like craft breweries that I actually started like drinking more stuff from. And what they did was the accessibility of not just standard styles and also like broadening horizons maybe into like Belgian styles and things like that. Like that was how I kind of started branching out more, was a lot of their stuff as well as just, you know, random beers at Fagan's. On my end, they didn't have a ton of variety necessarily. Had from Highland Park, one of my favorite breweries, as you can probably guess since I mention them almost every week. I did have their Lazy Susan. It's a peaches and nectarine sour wheat beer. Also had some Timbo Pills, which is back in stock over there. It's what I attest to be one of the better beers in California. It's a hoppy pills. Also had the last of the Today's Forecast from Pizza Port that we had in the fridge. And then I also had some whiskey from High West. Had a American Prairie Reserve that I finally finished off. So that was good. But now I need more whiskey because now that my wife's drinking again, we are going through whiskey quicker.
I was very jealous that Andy from the site had the Highland Park Threes crossover beer that I forgot was happening. And he lives very close to Threes. I live very far from Threes. But now I kind of want to go down to Brooklyn before, like, we all get stuck in our apartments. So I may have to seek that out.
Do it. Honestly, like, Highland Park is, I think, one of the best breweries in the country.
Yeah, the few times I've had anything from them, I always enjoyed it. And then, like, I saw Andy over in Brooklyn enjoying, and I'm like, well, I mean, it'd be silly not to.
Yeah, that seems like a given for you. But yeah, why don't we talk a little bit more about basketball here before we let James go and then Dan and I plunge ourselves into the filth of football. We don't have to go game by game, but maybe just a read on like ACC schedule, knowing that like everything else in the non-conference is a little questionable. James, where do you see SU finishing? Do you think 500 is reasonable? Do you think they can maybe finish a couple games over and maybe finish in the top 4 to 6 in the conference? Like what's your ceiling on this thing? And maybe like, where do you actually think things reasonably finish?
Yeah. You know, games canceled notwithstanding, assuming Syracuse is going to play a full league schedule here. I think a little over 500 is reasonable. We saw Syracuse come out 6th in the preseason ACC poll. Yeah. I mean, you could split hairs. I mean, I think the top 4 definitely decided. And, you know, Louisville's probably that 5th team, and then 6, 7, 8, it kind of becomes more of a jumble and really competitive. But, you know, Syracuse has been around 500 every year following the first year, the Tyler Ennis 25-0 year. So I think we can probably expect somewhere similar around there. If a full league schedule gets played, you know, maybe 12-8, that's probably where I would have them, just given how good the offense should be and hopefully some improvements made on the defensive end. But overall, yeah, I'd probably say 11-9 or 12-8 in the league.
All right, that's reasonably optimistic. Dan, what are you seeing on the schedule?
I think that's probably I'm going like game by game, trying to do it, and it does feel like we're probably going to be in that slightly over 500 range. But you know, there are wins here. I think everyone's going to be dealing with like issues in terms of getting started. So I'm hoping starting out with Boston College off the front end and Notre Dame, who I'm always like, the last couple of years, I've not known what to do with Notre Dame because like they've been like, they've always had a nice assemblage of players, but it seems
they're
like
they're trash.
Well, yeah, you know,
they've lost a lot. They lost TJ Gibbs and John Mooney. Those are big losses for them.
Yeah. So that makes me feel better. And then at Wake. So like, there's a chance to start off hot here. Obviously at UNC versus Florida State is tough, but yeah, I'm going to go, I'll go with 10 wins in conference. I think it's going to be very close to 500. And hopefully if assuming there's an NCAA tournament, like if you can hold serve in a major conference, hopefully you get like pretty legit, like benefit of the doubt, because you know, if you were to win 10 games in the ACC this year, like you can kind of pencil in what you know, like what you can assume the front end of the normal schedule would have looked like. Like you would have won most of your non-conferences and you would have, you know, probably had one or two bid matchups, but hopefully without a lot of those early data points in the early season tournaments, which are getting canceled one by one and whatever else, like just like being a competitive ACC team is enough to get into March. If we have one, if we have a NCAA tournament, which I assume because last year was canceled, they'll do everything in their power to not have miss out on again. So yeah, it's just such a mystery. It's so weird to look at a schedule like this because it's so different than what we're accustomed to.
Oh yeah. And honestly, like, and I get into this in the piece that we're doing too about predictions, but like the fact that, you know, the lesser teams in, you know, non-power conferences are not really going to have opportunities to showcase themselves a lot in like bigger games and these early season tournaments. Like, you're probably going to see, I mean, it's usually pretty heavy on Power 5 teams, but I think you're going to see it even more heavy toward Power 5 teams in terms of the large field. And that helps a team like Syracuse that's kind of on the cusp. Realistically, you know, if SU can win, you know, 11, 12 games, I think they're almost assuredly in. I think 10 gets dicey depending on who you beat. I think there's 10 reasonable wins on this schedule without upsets. And I think after that, you know, like I did that piece a couple of weeks ago about like, you know, win tiers, and having like five games in each did help kind of bucket out like what SU needs to do. So, you know, if you have to go 5-0 against that bottom group, okay, that's already five in the bank, but then you need to basically go like above 500 in the other, in tier two and tier three, to like start entertaining more than 10 wins. And even then, even if you do that, you're still not necessarily picking up that marquee win that you do need in tier one. So for me, like this season kind of gets decided by like what SU does against like the Virginia Tech, Clemson, Miami, Georgia Tech contingents. And really like what they handle in there is going to dictate a lot. I think it's 10 and 10 right now. Once we get some games under our belt, we can see like what Richmond looks like, how Griffin's fits in, how we see, you know, some of those changes we talked about earlier in the episode, that maybe is able to upgrade it. But right now, based on what we know, I think 10 and 10 is kind of where I'm netting out.
I just went about through. I think I'm at 11. I think I 11 and 9.
I'm accounting for one dumb loss somewhere.
That's fair. I mean,
it'll happen.
That's penciled in. You bake that into the equation. And you hope you get like the big stupid win that shouldn't have happened to offset it.
It'll be Boston College on December 12th.
Nightmare.
People, even if we ended up being like pretty good, if we lose that BC game, I'm terrified for all of us.
Well, I just can't tolerate it anymore based on what I've had to yell at the football. But there's just this situation where it's just not. Yeah, as a fan, it just won't be worth sitting through. But I think there's a real shot at like a 3-0-ish start, depending, or at least 3-0 start in the ACC. We'll see on, like, I think Rutgers obviously decides a lot. But I think there's a real, I mean, you have BC, Notre Dame, Wake Forest on there before you get the North Carolina game. Obviously, Buffalo's sitting in the middle of there. As is Rutgers, there'll probably be a Binghamton-ish game or something like that. Thrown in there too. So there's a chance for SU to really start to get some momentum before they have to go on the road at North Carolina. But we'll see. I think honestly, like 10 wins, if you get 10 wins in conference and if Rutgers is what people think Rutgers could be this year, then yeah, that might be enough, because if you manage to knock off Rutgers, even if you don't, you know, it's a quality game on the schedule and strength of schedule could become, you know, a real differentiating point this year, even more so than normal.
Yes, we can just ignore what this all means about Rutgers athletics at this point. Or we can make the jokes about 2020. Whatever you guys want.
Fine with both. Well, that was it from the basketball side of things. James, anything else you want to kind of impart on us before you leave?
No, thanks for having me on. And you know, I just tell listeners and readers just, you know, follow along. Obviously, we'll have updates all throughout the season and we'll have comprehensive coverage. We've got Christian's doing good work on the football side. Sounds like he's going to help over on the basketball side a little bit. So we'll have some new voices in the mix and, you know, definitely keep it posted. And thank you guys for having me on and glad I was able to contribute somewhat to the beer conversation.
Of course, James, appreciate it. And yeah, everybody follow James and obviously the blog all season. We'll have plenty of content coming up as the games get started this week. And we're back with some football here as we close out the episode. It's just John and Dan now. Dan, I don't really think we need to rehash what happened on Friday because it was pretty damn miserable. Offense basically didn't show up. Defense did, and defense actually like looked good until it was just like too gassed to do anything. Jacoby Morgan might not be able to play. I'm not really sure like what to think of this season anymore, just because it was already questionable like what sort of takeaways we could have to begin with. That's gotten worse. I don't necessarily think we're developing anything on offense anymore, which is problematic. I guess just a quick thought from you, and then we'll just jump into the NC State game that we're almost definitely going to lose.
Just awful. Like the passing game, we couldn't get anything going. As somewhat impressive / like hopeful Morgan, you know, looked in the last couple of games, he just couldn't get anything going, and then he got hurt, and hopefully he's okay. He'll be okay moving forward. It was relatively scary that we heard he was in the hospital and he wasn't. But you know, hopefully everything is okay generally. Tucker was really good, and that's about all you can say about the offense, honestly. Like Tucker's great and he's good, like regardless of everything else is happening, which is a nice attribute to have out of your top running back, and hopefully that'll be the case throughout his career. You need more than 45 passing yards to do anything against anyone, and the fact that it all came against like one of the ACC's worst defenses in Louisville is just really disheartening. Like this team is obviously missing a million guys, but it felt like a team that's just like kind of ready to pack it in, and that's never fun to watch. It's never good for fan fans can tell, even if you're like not able to go to games this year, like we can all tell on TV when a team like is really fighting. Like against Clemson, they fought super hard. I was really proud of them. And like there are obviously fewer guys playing now, but it's not like a, you know, remarkably different roster than it was a few weeks ago. It just seems like this year is kind of beating them down. So it's both like kind of a natural thing to happen to a team that's going through a year as bad as this, but it's hard to like find bright spots in it because, you know, fans are getting restless. And I think both like they should know that Babers is going to be here next year, and we can hope that he turns it around and he deserves that one last shot. But like the reality is setting in like that it's going to be like this one final season to get it turned. And if he has a bowl season next year, you know, you can kind of write off this year because it was such a stupid situation overall. But if not, it's, you know, I think we all know where things are going, but hopefully everyone gives him at least a fair shake moving into next year, as bad as stuff has looked here, because there's really no advantage not to. Like, it's never a good look, even if these things shouldn't matter, like the things that are set online or whatever. It's never a great look to have like your fan base in open rebellion when, you know, the coach is still hoping to turn things around. And like, we have a decent class coming in. We'll hopefully be returning like a cavalcade of players from injury and everything else, and hopefully we'll turn it around in next year, because as bad as this year is, I've just tried to like remind myself, like if this is a normal season, we probably would have played, you know, we would have had these much more winnable games early in the year, and that could have at least set the tone for like, you know, maybe just another disappointing 4-8 year, but it wouldn't have looked like this. And maybe it would have been better if we had like the running backs in the start and everything else, and the offensive line was a little more stabilized. We had, you know, a normal practice. So I think it's hard to disregard how much the situation that we've been dealing with has probably impacted this. And that's not to make an excuse, as everyone's dealing with that stuff. But I do think we should hopefully go into 2021, assuming everything in the world gets closer to normal before the season, and say like, hey, let's, you know, whatever happened last year, let's hope that this is a normal year that we can put that behind us. And if it's bad again, then we all know what's going to happen. If it's not bad, I hope that people are like, okay, 2020 was its own thing. And if Babers win six games next year, I hope people aren't like, well, it was only six games and he just won one last year. Like, I just hope that there are fair expectations moving into next season. And like, next season is judged as a regular football season. And it's not like in concert with whatever this is, because I do think it's been really bad and it's been like kind of traumatizing to watch at points. But if things bounce back and are good next year, or at least decent next year, I hope that people aren't going to like use this year because they have an agenda, or they just don't think that Babers is the right guy, even if evidence is, you know, points to him be at least being better than like what Schaefer was at this point. So it's that's just a long rant, but I'm just trying to stay at least like somewhat optimistic. And if it starts next year again, like, we'll be talking about coaching candidates, and we all know that's the situation.
Yeah, I really couldn't have said it better myself. I don't really have much to add, to be honest. I think that you really encapsulated it well. Realistically, like, we're rooting for Dino to succeed, not because of any favoritism toward him, but because we want Syracuse to succeed realistically. And if it doesn't happen, then it doesn't happen. And yeah, I think you next year see the articles from myself, from Syracuse.com, from elsewhere, about, you know, why it's time to move on, and the you know, list of reasons why, and I mean, we've spelled out most of them already as ones that you can use against him next year if it doesn't work out. You go for it.
It should be said, like, this is a very difficult job, and he won 10 games 2 years ago, and like, that doesn't mean he gets to stay forever, but it also, I think, means let's be absolutely sure he's not the guy.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. Like, let's make sure that he has everything he needs to win. And obviously this year he doesn't, and that's, you know, probably in part his fault and in part just like the world we're living in. But let's like all make sure, like, without a reasonable doubt, that Babers, okay, just like, he had the one moment and it's clearly not working from here. And that may be the case. Like, it's very possible. But I think like the high was so high that it's hard to punt on that early. And not that it's like super early, but I just think it's not unreasonable to say, hey, that bought him these 2 years and the third, I guess, now. I mean, I'm rooting for him. He seems like, you know, the kind of guy I like coaching my team, compared to some other guys that are out there that are just like, I mean, you can go read the news today, and I know that person's been a lot more successful, but like, just a total, just like some gross stuff coming out. And like, Babers just seems more thoughtful and like seems to get it. And I know that comes off as him being like kind of aloof at times, and that probably frustrates people. And it might seem that he cares less, and I don't think that's the case. I think his personality is just a little more even tempered at all times, aside from like the fun hype videos and whatnot. That's just like, I don't think either of us are like unnecessarily tying ourselves to Babers. I just think we know that 2018 was a rare thing. I think it was Andy that tweeted like the list of 10 win seasons Syracuse has had, and it's not very long. And Babers is on a very, very short list there. And you can like do the whole thing with like who recruited who, and like at the end of the day, it was a lot of his players, it was a lot of freshmen that he recruited, and then also the guys he inherited played way better for him than they played for anyone else. So it's just like, let's just make sure we know exactly what we're doing before we make a big move like that, because the worst thing that could happen is like Babers goes, gets another, you know, lower level, like a Mountain West job in 2 years, kills it, and then ends up at Cal and is like there for 10 years. Like, that would, we'd feel so ridiculous if that happened. So let's just make sure that he is not the guy before we do anything crazy. And if he's not, I love coaching search articles. I love compiling lists like that. I already have one name in mind that I'm not going to do because it's unfair to the current administration, but like, we will be there with everyone else. It's just, let's verify beyond shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, I
agree. That being said, I mean, the rest of this year is going to be awful.
Yeah. The last two games are going to be absolutely unwatchable. The final game against Notre Dame is going to be absolutely miserable.
Unless we get like a G Rob Notre Dame moment, which would be,
there's no way.
I don't think so. This Notre Dame team is really good. And that Notre Dame team wasn't like, it was fun to beat them, but no way. The 08 Notre Dame team was pretty like mediocre. It would be hilarious if we knocked Notre Dame out of the playoff run.
I would love it, but at
the ACC time, would be really mad at us.
Super.
Although part of it would be, because like, it is an ACC team this year, and there would be benefits to them, to two teams making it. Although like, at this point, I kind of want Clemson to like fall on their face. But at the same time, ruining that for them, I think a lot of the fan bases would actually be like, that's actually really funny, because they're not going to stay in the ACC. So it is what it is. Like,
yeah, if anything, this gives them more reason to not stay if they make the playoff once again. But in any case, I know we didn't talk really about NC State at all, but knowing how dire things are for Syracuse, who do you think wins this game and how?
Oh, I think NC State wins. NC State beat Liberty, which I'm actually happy about. Ugly game, 15-14. They're way better. They're a lot better than I thought they would be entering this year. Doran got them on like decent footing. They've gotten good quarterback play. Doran today also had like a total like harebrained quote about COVID, so that was fun. So yeah, I mean, hopefully we get bad things into more respectability. But I thought the NC State line, which was 15, was like pretty low. I would take NC State by a couple touchdowns. So I'm gonna go NC State 34, Syracuse 10.
Yeah, I'm thinking 38 to 7. And like I'm annoyed by that, but realistically, where I think there's benefits because it was Bailey Hockman's starting, and Hockman's not really a super accurate quarterback, so that plays into our defensive strengths. But
the problem is that we can't score off of them.
Yeah, we can't score off of them unless Garrett Williams runs it back or somebody else does too.
I felt so bad for the defense on Friday. Oh, they played so hard, and like
so hard for the beginning of the game. Like they really created all the opportunities. I mean, it shouldn't take Williams or Melifonwu or Trill on some random lateral like scoring to like make us feel like we have a chance. And I do feel like it's kind of come down to that. I also think that the run game for NC State's been so good this year, with Zonovan Knight, Ricky Pearson, like this is not going to go well. We just kind of have to deal with it.
The one thing I started thinking, during that game, do you think we just give Sterling Dilbert the boot? Again, it might not be his fault. Like he was handed a very tough situation, but obviously, he was brought in to kind of be like the Sean Lewis 2.0, like the guy that Babers trusts implicitly, who was on page with him. And it just hasn't looked very good at all.
It's looked miserable. I mean, it looked like Gilbert looked even worse than he did at his previous stop at USF in Texas. Like this has been an unmitigated disaster. And to be honest, like this is the source of what's killing fans and it's getting people really worked up.
Do you think we're going to see a new OC next year? Like obviously.
I think we can't not realistically. Like if Dino brings him back, then and if Kavanaugh comes back as well, like yeah. I know Kavanaugh has him recruiting whatever, but like Gilbert doesn't have that. Like realistically, like Gilbert's only been on campus for a year and has performed miserably. And even with COVID, considered, like this has been like there was nothing we've seen that warrants bringing him back and bringing him back. To me, indicates that next season will not go as planned in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it's tough because, like, I feel like firing him is like a tacit admission of like we need to do something wholesale different on offense, and that's a tough thing to do when you're trying to like move forward and have a bowl season. But things are so bad that I agree. I don't know that you can reasonably say. I don't know that you can reasonably say that like there's an upside to bringing him back. Kavanaugh needs to go too. Like we were banging that drum last year. I think we both kind of bought into the like, okay, he's recruiting well. There was like this uptick late season. I think we saw like maybe a slight uptick this year, but this wasn't there on Friday.
The pass protection was miserable.
Like, yeah. So I think he needs to go. I think the defense, I would leave the defense intact. I think with a reasonable offense, this defense would be like a story of the ACC this year, honestly. And the offense is just so bad that no one can pay attention because like they're giving up 30 points. Yeah, well, because they're on the field at for like 2/3 of the game, and the offense doesn't do anything with all of the opportunities are presented by the defense. So I want to see Tony White like do whatever you need to keep him, and hopefully people are not like looking at the underlying stuff here so he doesn't get poached, but do whatever you can there, because I do think the 3-3-5 is going to start catching on, because like even Mississippi State's looking pretty good on defense now, as bad as or as up and down as they've been. But yeah, do whatever you can to keep him, and then like just find something like so I just need something new and on the offense, and it can still be like generally what Babers likes to do, but he needs someone who has like fresh ideas to come in here and like figure out the best way to get this team to score points, because otherwise we're gonna be we're going to be looking for a new start in 2022. And hopefully, you know, I don't want that to be the case. I want Babers to succeed long term. So, yeah, fun times. We're all having great time with football.
It's delightful. In any case, Dan, appreciate your time today, as always. Hopefully brighter days ahead for Syracuse sports in one way or another.
I actually got excited for basketball talking tonight. And also women's basketball, which we didn't bring up. It's going to be awesome. Like, they're probably going to be our best team this year. Support them when they start up soon.
Yeah, they're starting up soon. They're a top 25 team already. They're bringing back Tiana Mangakahia. They have a very, very stacked roster.
A top five recruiting class. Like,
Camilla Cardoso dunked in practice the other day.
I saw people joking with, like, Tiana on Twitter about her throwing lobs. I'm like, let's do that.
CNY Lob City, perfect. Let's make this happen.
Let's just, like, full-on women's basketball version of what was the Will Ferrell movie? There were the Flint Tropics. Tropic Thunder is a very different movie.
No, I know. Why can't I remember this stupid movie? Damn it. I'll mention it after. It's like killing you now.
Semi-pro.
No, there you go. Semi-pro. Anyway. So, we'll leave on that. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. And go Orange.
Go Orange.